Hello, everybody. Welcome to the New in Chess podcast. In the New in Chess podcast, we talk to leading grandmasters, authors, trainers, and other personalities from the fascinating world of chess. The New in Chess podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. DGT is the only brand that provides everything you need to broadcast the games of a chess event, from chess clocks to sensory chess boards. My name is Dirk-Jan ten Geuzendam. My guest in this episode of the New in Chess podcast is Dutch Grandmaster Erwin Lamy. Erwin has been a chess professional for some 20 years now, and among his most notable successes are victories in the Reykjavik Open in 2015 and in the Dutch Championship in 2022. And I will certainly not forget to mention his win in the Rabat Blitz in 2015, ahead of speedsters like Shakhriyar Mamedyarov and Alexei Shirov, if only for the fact that I had the privilege of watching him from a front row in the Moroccan capital. Erwin loves to play in tournaments, but his chess activities expand into other areas as well. He's a prolific writer and a highly respected trainer who has been on Veselin Topalov's World Championship team, and he has worked with Anish Giri for many years. I've invited Erwin to the podcast to talk about his life in chess and to see where our conversation will lead us. No doubt we will look ahead to the upcoming European Team Championships, and we'll look back on the Grand Swiss that ended 2 weeks ago and left us with so much to talk about. Erwin, great to have you here. Thanks for being on the podcast. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Dirk-Jan. I'm glad to be here.
Very good. I already mentioned the European Team Championships. That's an event that is on the horizon. You're going to Batumi in, 2 weeks from now?
Close to 2 weeks, yeah.
Yes, and the Dutch team is a very, very strong team. You're seeded second. There's Anish Giri, the winner of the Grand Swiss on first board. There's Jordan van Verreest, who also played really well in the Grand Swiss. Max Warmerdam, you, Luc van Wely. Sounds good. Sounds like an attractive team to be on.
Yes, I really like our team. As you said, Anish is of course in great form, having just won the Grand Swiss. I think he's really on a great streak. Earlier he won, of course, the Sharjah Master. He's having a great year. Jordan, I think, is also doing quite well. The return of Luc is, of course, is going to be the main talking point.
Yeah, the only one, actually.
Yeah. Right. it's nice to have him back. I mean, he's also having a bit of a resurgence, so to speak. Yeah. So I'm very curious to see how he will be doing. Luc and I go way back, so it'll be nice to be playing alongside him again.
Yeah, it's not like he's really that old, but for a professional chess player, his age is respectable. But still, he is a very strong player, very active player. It's one of the things that I admire in you as well, that your passion for playing. I mean, you've been doing this for quite some years. You have other interests in chess. I mean, you know, just like me, you're also interested in old books. You know an awful lot about computers in chess. But playing, that's the big thing.
Yeah, I think that is a must, actually. When you get older, if you lose that fire, then I think it's... I've seen many players my age, I'm 40, turned 40 this year. Mm. I think many players my age already dropped quite significantly rating wise. And I think that's mostly because they have, distractions in their life. So to speak, many start a family or other things. My life didn't change that much over the last 15 years, let's say. Very solid home life with Alina for me, chess is still the same as 15 years ago. I still enjoy it in the same way. I still love playing in the same way. So I think that contributes a lot to me sort of keeping my level, at least for now. It's going to be interesting because there's going to be, of course, a point where I will start inevitably probably dropping my level as you age, that those things happen. And it's going to be interesting for me to see if I still have the same passion for the game then. I haven't yet experienced what happens if I will drop, I don't know, 100 rating points. It can happen, obviously.
Yeah.
Will I still enjoy it? I think I will still enjoy playing, but that's let's say a next. I hope that that's still some years away. Yeah. I'm confident actually that I can still keep this level for a couple of years.
Yeah, and probably the reassuring thing is that let's say you sometimes see players who continue to play, and you know that there's not really many other options. I mean, this is what they've always done, and they didn't train for anything else. In your case, I mean, you could easily give up competitive chess and still make a good living out of chess.
Well, to be honest, I don't really see myself as a professional player. I see myself as a professional in chess. So yeah. I'm a chess professional, you could say. Yeah. So I do everything related to chess, as you said in the beautiful introduction. I'm a second. I write about chess. I make courses for Chessable. Everything related to chess. This is a part of it.
But playing
one that I most enjoy, obviously. If it would be possible for me to go from tournament to tournament and make my living in that way, I would do it immediately. But unfortunately, it was clear to me quite early on that wasn't possible.
Mm-hmm. You always saw your limits.
I became a grandmaster around 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, I think in the Netherlands, with a rating of around 2600, you could just do that. You could just play tournaments, and you could have a fine living. You could you wouldn't become a millionaire, but you would live comfortably, and you would make your hobby your profession. So in a way, that's ideal.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I think that level has gone to maybe 2700. I think you really need 2700. In order to just play the game and not do anything else. Mm. I never reached 2700, obviously. Mm. I nicely in the middle. 2650 was my peak, more or less. So I always, from an early age, did different things related to chess. Because it was clear to me that I wanted to pursue chess in one way or another.
Yeah.
So that's the way I did it, with doing all kinds of things. But ideally, I would, of course, have... Yeah, play. I mean, if you would ask me as a 15-year-old boy, I would say that, of course, become world champion and play tournaments and
What probably gets more difficult through the years, or in many cases, is that that it becomes more difficult to cope with the stress, because there's... If your income depends on competitive chess, then there's a lot of pressure, and... How have you managed to cope with that? I've seen you at tournaments and you're very focused. I mean, everything is at the service of that tournament. I mean, but at the same time, you're enjoying it. So that is special. I mean, is that a gift or how do you see
that? Yeah, I don't know if it's... I never really felt that pressure. Somehow I never played chess with the idea of making a living out of it. Mm-hmm. It just happened that way.
Yeah.
So probably if you would tell me before the game, you have to win this game, otherwise there will be no food on the table. Like you say, it is true. I have to make a living with. But I never perceived it that way somehow. So maybe I managed to just ignore the fact that I have to... I think actually with age, what I noticed already a little bit, but maybe it's better to give an example. For example, Levon Aronian now. He had an amazing run the past couple of months. I think he's 43. Around that age. And... but let me start by speaking. I feel less energetic than 20 years ago. I think that's normal, and I think for him that must be similar.
Yeah.
So to me, I was very surprised to see him play one tournament after another. Okay, he was very successful. He won the freestyle. In America, he was usually successful, but then the Grand Swiss. I think it was too much. So energy-wise, he just collapsed.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually the main thing once you grow. I mean, I think Levon has this, still has the drive to play, still has an excellent level, but to play so many things in a row, it just, I think it just got him. And I think, and for me, the level, the energy level, that's something I really think about a lot during tournaments. That's for me actually a bigger deal than the pressure of or the stress. Or I don't really feel very, I don't feel stressed at all actually during, I enjoy playing tournaments. It doesn't give me a lot. Of course, there's competitive stress, you could say, during a game. You feel the nervous energy. It's these kind of things. But I don't feel, I definitely, like I can say, in January now, I can already look forward to it. Like, oh,
I'm already... Well, maybe let's look at last this year's, if I can say, early January. There you did very well in the challenges. You came very close to qualifying for the Masters again, where you've played in the past. To begin with, how do you cope with? I mean, you're talking about your energy levels. How do you cope with your energy levels in Waggensee, which is for some people it's a very difficult tournament. It's wintry. For some reason, people talk more about the weather on Waggensee than any other tournament.
Yes.
Although there have been events in Ganty-Mansijsk where I think things are much more complicated. Yes. But how do you cope with
it? Like I say, it's very much a mental thing also, I think, right? And I only feel the tiredness in Waggensee after the last round. I don't feel it before that. I don't know what it is. Maybe, I mean, I spoke about this with Anish as well, who's, of course, historically had amazing results in Waggensee, always doing very well there.
Yeah.
It's our event somehow. We feel at home, we... maybe it's a bit easier for us because we know what we can expect. It's 2.5 grueling weeks of chess, and I don't really feel the strain of that tournament. Only afterwards, I don't really have a good explanation, but maybe just the experience of having gone through many of those events already. We know what we can expect. We don't panic very quickly. If you lose a game, you know, it's a long tournament, 13 rounds.
Well, and you also appreciate all the other good things that are there, because that's what I've often thought. If people tell me about the downsides of Waggensee, they think, that's true. But don't you see all the other things?
You like me, we've been walking around there. You even longer, but I've been playing there more than 20 times now. I know every corner of that village. And so in general, I, of course, look at that tournament completely differently than someone who just plays there for the first time. I see everything through this glasses of someone who enjoys everything about Waggensee. For me, everything about Waggensee is amazing. I have noticed that not everyone sees it way. But for me, Waggensee is the highlight of the year, actually. Every year again, we're talking September. I think a few months and we're back.
Well, maybe that's what Meta should be doing. They should develop Waggensee glasses so that people see the real Waggensee.
That would be amazing. Who knows?
Who knows? But, as said, you came close to qualifying. You were among the leaders in the end, it was Tai Daivan who won the tournament ahead of Suleimani. But you were very close. And let's say, if we're not counting your last round loss, I mean, you could have, if you'd won that game,
we would have shared first. And I think the Tai Dai would still have qualified. I think that was the tiebreaker. Sharing first would have been just amazing. So that would have been already enough for me in that sense. It would have been great. I lost that last round to Vaishali.
Things happen.
Yes.
I mean, credit to her,
absolutely.
Your game was a bit unfortunate. to put it mildly. but in fact,
I like the understatement.
I want to go back to the a couple of rounds earlier. I mean, when the tension is building, and it is, it's realistic that you're playing for a spot in the Masters. Don't you feel tension then?
No, really. Yeah, it's I don't want to sound as if I'm some kind of. No. But maybe that's also a bit of an age thing. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I've been around. I've played twice in the in the main in the Masters, and yeah, that would have been amazing to qualify. I mean, especially because I would really like to. Obviously, these guys are much stronger than I am. There's no doubt about it. But I would love to challenge myself against the new generation, the Gukic. The Gukic is actually the only one I've never played. I played Prague in the challengers. Yeah. I played Aldusatorov in the challengers. So Irigaisi in the challengers.
Yeah.
Because they always first start in the challengers and then they go to the Masters. Yeah. But Gukic, I think, made the jump in one go to the Masters. I've never played against. But in general, it would have been great. So because it was suggested to me that perhaps on a subconscious level I wasn't ready to try to qualify or but that was really not. I would really love to qualify. I mean, I would really. Definitely take the chance to play. Of course, it would be a very tough tournament. I mean, I understand what I'm saying here, but no, I would definitely have taken up that that challenge. I think it's just a great chance to play against the best. It's and there would be no shame in whatever result comes then.
No, that's good to hear because. I can imagine that there would be people say, well, maybe you shouldn't do that. I mean, why torture yourself?
Well, that's the thing. Maybe I shouldn't, but I don't think I would be able to decline it. I think that I would be just too interested to see how I would survive or not survive. Well, and maybe something inside of you still hopes that, well, you know, maybe I'll win a game here or there. You know, you never know. Yeah. Things happen, yeah? Things happen. But of course, the challenges is already a very fine test for me generally. So I don't need to, necessarily need to step. But had I won the group, I would, definitely have accepted the invitation, let's say. Absolutely.
That's good to hear.
Absolutely.
Like you accepted the invitation when you went to Ziegemann in Malmö.
Yes, that was a nice surprise,
You were supposed to be the commentator, and then it was... Fiedert, he dropped out at the last moment. And you were asked to replace him.
Yes.
Did you hesitate for a second?
No. The call came that that Wiedert might not be able to make it. I was actually in an art fair at the moment that moment in Rotterdam, so we were looking at some art. I was very inspired.
Oh yeah.
And I got a call like, could you be on stage? I said, yeah, absolutely, no problem.
Let me first buy this painting.
Yes, let me first. No, that was absolutely I did commentary a couple of times there. I know the organizers well. It's a very nice event, nicely run, a very sympathetic event, very absolutely. nice event. I'm very happy to also to commentate there. But they were in need of a player, and the field was great. I got to play against Ivanchuk, who I never played before.
First
time against against Vasil. So that was for me a great great pleasure. Also the young generation at Dokmus, special player.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, you had all. I mean, some of the people who. Who chess lovers love to talk about.
Yeah,
people love to hear about Vasil Ivanchuk. With him, I mean, it's also amazing that he still has this passion for chess. But at the same time, I can see that it also takes its toll on him. I mean, whenever things are not going well, he truly suffers.
I think, but he plays with the same passion that he always brought together. And he's still able also, not as often as he used to, but he's still able sometimes to produce some beautiful highlights.
Yeah.
So I think he's just still enjoying the game a lot. It's nice to see.
Yeah.
I saw him analyzing with, sorry, I forgot his name, the winner of the event. Sindarov.
Oh yeah, Sindarov.
They
yeah,
were nice after yeah. the after the closing. They were analyzing something on, yeah. on a small board. And yeah. You could see the yeah. It's he's just also after my game the game I had with Ivanjo, which was very long and grueling. And afterwards we still analyzed a bit. Spoke about the end game, if it's winning or not. And he's completely into it still. It is nice to see. And like I said, I never had a chance to play him, so that was. That was a nice experience, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, and he's a totally unique talent. I mean, I cannot think of anyone who resembles Ivanchuk. I mean, all the things together.
It's, yes. Yeah, the way he approaches the game. Yes, of course, he's completely his own way of doing things. And also, I have no idea how he prepares for a game, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does he do? He plays me tomorrow? I don't know what he's...
No.
I don't think he's sitting behind the laptop and clicks for a couple of hours. I think he makes some thoughts and he... Mm. And for example, he played suddenly the Benoni against me, which he hadn't done, I think, in ages. I didn't even really seriously prepare for the game because I knew something would come that I wouldn't expect. Yeah, yeah. Suddenly he played Benoni against me. It was a very, very interesting game. I was winning at some point and didn't manage to win. Anyway, it was a great experience to play him, definitely. Yes.
Oh, it's funny that last week I was having a talk with John Spielman. I mean, we did a podcast, but we also had a longer talk. And then the amazing thing I thought was that John said... I never thought about becoming world champion, you know, because I was always surprised that I was beating stronger and stronger players because he was just wondering when he would meet someone who was clearly better. And then in the end, he found a couple. That was Karpov and Kasparov.
Yeah, yeah.
And he added Ivanchuk. He thought Ivanchuk was also in an extra league that was, let's say, out of reach for him, which I thought was a beautiful compliment.
Yeah, and I think also Kasparov himself often rates Ivanchuk extremely highly. And it is true that Ivanchuk, just like actually Aronian to Magnus, Magnus often mentions Aronian as one of the few players who can occasionally outplay him, like in long parts of the game. Like Aronian won a few games against Magnus where he really, you know, great stuff.
Yeah.
And Ivanchuk did the same to Kasparov a couple of times. French game from I forgot the year. But anyway, it was a very nice game in the French where Ivanchuk... And there are a couple such games where Ivanchuk beat Kasparov. Of course, also the other way around, obviously. But that brilliance Kasparov probably didn't experience that often in his career because he was usually the man. Ivanchuk is definitely, I would also rate him very highly in among the players. I'm repeating, I was very happy to play him because I didn't think I would still have the chance.
You mentioned Aronian. He's probably another player that is very difficult to compare to anyone.
Very original.
The total package.
Yeah, very, very original. Yeah, and in his peak, he was, of course, absolute beast.
Peaking again.
He had, of course, at some point he had 28, 30 or something back in the day. We had this period where he was the absolute number two without any doubt.
Yeah.
We had a clear number one, a clear number two. Mm. And it remains a pity that they never played a match. That would have been, especially in that period, it would have been a great match, I think.
I should mention one of the nice aspects of the tournament in Malmö was the mix of young talents current talents and like Sindarov, of course.
He's one of the
hot guys now. And then you had Jesic Erdogmus. Apologies for my pronunciation.
Yeah, I thought I didn't dare.
He's this amazing kid from Turkey. He's 14 years old. But you've been watching him there. How good is he?
No, he's really good. First of all, I played against Gurel in Prague and also in Edis Gurel, other great talent. Also amazing.
Yeah.
And then this guy comes along.
Who's
2 years younger.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was that... So I played him in the last round in Malmö, and we played this line of the Queen's Gambit Accepted, where by pure chance, because nowadays it happens more rarely every like I rarely get preparation on the board, but in this case I was on it, and I managed to get some kind of slight endgame advantage, and I thought, okay, well, you know, young kid, I have my kind of position, I will now squeeze, and then he just effortlessly held it, but not that I was not even close. I didn't get anywhere, and I thought that was really something. I mean, I was really impressed by it. Yeah. I mean, I would fully understand if he would, you know, attack me and make me somewhere, you know, how kids are supposed to play.
Yeah.
But he just played really good, you know, cultured chess. Just he was just very strong. He really gets, he already plays on a very high level. And that really impressed me. I mean, we analyzed afterwards. I mean, it was very clear to me that there was no...
Yeah, and it's funny.
He's serious.
He doesn't sound like a 16-year-old either. I mean...
No, he's... Yeah, no, it's... he's going to be very strong, obviously. Yeah. Well, he showed it in the Grand Prix as well. I mean, he's... Yeah. I think he's around 2650 already right now. Mm. I mean, obviously, he's working with Mamadiarov was with him in Malmö. So he's my I think I'm 1 week older than Mamadiarov. So I complimented him on his new job of coach, which I think he enjoys. He's kind of taking it a bit more relaxed these days. But yeah, no, at Dokmus, I expect great things. But okay, it's a bit of an easy prediction, but already back then in Malmö, I was thinking that this is real.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. At DGT, we want to bring people together and help them grow through play by supporting chess and creating innovative, high quality products for players everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
Well, you played another prodigy in Wagensee, who was even younger.
Oro. Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant Mishra, who I also played a couple of times, of course.
Yeah, he's already a veteran.
Yeah, he's a veteran.
16 years
older. I think
Oro
is 11, he's 5 years younger.
I remember before you started the game, you thought it so funny to sit opposite a kid that, I mean, you were already a professional. He wasn't even born.
Not even close. First of all, I don't want to sound old or feel old.
You don't sound old at all.
It is, of course, a fact that the first time I came to Wagensee, or at least I played in the Grandmaster group, I was 19. And then at some point I played against people like Nigel, for instance, who was then twice my age. Okay. And at some point that slowly starts to... And already in the last couple of years, I'm regularly either the oldest player in the group or one of the oldest players in the group. And then at some point you play against Prague, who is then twice younger than me. And now you play someone... I mean, he was 10 last year. He just turned 11 in January.
It was really
close.
Yeah.
So I'm more than three times his age, and it is so. You're on such a different wavelength somehow. Yeah. But then the moves come, and he plays very normal chess, very good chess.
The moves are for real.
Moves are. Of course, he had a tough time in Wagensee, but he still won a couple of games. I think he did very decent, and he's playing this event. Where he's winning every game. I think he's on 5.5 out of 6 now in this GM group with Granda, and there's this tournament ongoing now in Spain where he's doing amazing things, and it's clear that he's gonna be a grandmaster soon.
These phenomena, we've gotten used to it. Has it become easier to play them? I mean, to react to them in a realistic manner, because it is natural to think, it's a kid.
But that's what I just said about Dokmus. I don't think it used to be that you play a kid and he just plays then and he just plays as well as he does.
Yeah.
I do think, I don't know if that applies specifically to kids, but in general, I think the level has gone up tremendously all over the place. So I'm a strong believer in progress in general, like in science, anywhere.
Yeah.
So I think that calls, not only calls, but let's say the top 100 of now, if you pair them against the top 100 of 50 years ago, I think it'll be a massacre. Eh? But I feel that, let's say, the broader world of chess, that level has gone up enormously and maybe at even a faster rate than the top. And I think in the past you had a clear top 10, let's say 10 top players. I think that also became less clear. Anish is now number 7. He was number 20 at some point, and the group became bigger, and the top became also larger. I think, and well, for the kids, they just learn so fast. They it's like they play chess on such a good level already at such an early age. But still, I think in the case of Oro, for example. Of course, he was so young that certain aspects were not there yet. At least if I can say this year. I mean, definitely could, at some certain points in the game, you could still say like, okay, he's still a kid. Parts he did already amazing for his, of course, tactics, he's on it. I already lost many games to him online, on Blitz. I mean, the speed stuff, he's very good. But in certain parts of the game, he is still a kid. But already, if you look at the 16, 17, 18-year-old, it's a completely different... the general level has gone up tremendously.
You say you've always been interested in progress, which must have helped you. I mean, you've always been on the cutting edge of technical innovations in chess, very much interested in what new computers can bring to the game. And I think you can easily be called a specialist there. to what extent has that helped you in your own play?
Yeah, I think we are now in a weird moment in chess where it used to be indeed that you try to get the best hardware, get the best software, and then you go to work, you find your ideas and. But nowadays, Stockfish has become so good. The hardware, my laptop, if I run Stockfish for a minute on a position, even less, it will give me suggestions which are fine, which are good, which are... So it became much easier in that way. It's a tough also for the top players. It became a bit of difficult. It's a bit unclear. In the past, it was very clear. At least in my conversations with top players, it was very clear. You would just work on your openings, make sure you're a bit sharp, play some blitz with friends, or make sure you're ready to play. Go with ideas to a tournament, and that's it. But nowadays, you can spend a month on the Berlin or on Nidor or whatever. You will just not find any convincing things.
So what should you be looking for
exactly
now?
It's an open question, in fact, that many people are struggling with. I think right now the focus is shifting much more back to just your chess skills. Like, you should just be basically people have started accepting that, well, you know, openings tough, but let's at least make sure that if we get the game going, that we are ready to. So people are doing more chess training. In fact, very logical. Okay. Just working on your game, be it calculation, end game, all kinds of training games.
Yeah.
So just preparing for the I think if you would ask some top players about the opening ideas that they have, you'd be very disappointed right now. I think it's one of the reasons why some top players started to enjoy the whole freestyle movement, because they feel a bit helpless. Their old way of working no longer applies. But the funny thing is, I spoke about this topic with Gukesh at some point in Norway.
Yeah,
this was, I think, 2 years ago, I would say. I think 2 years ago. And we spoke at the closing, and I was kind of having a frank conversation with him where I was telling him, like, yeah, these openings, it's kind of hopeless at the moment. Like, and he looked at me and he said something along the lines of, oh, really? Like, what are you talking about? What's going on? Like, and I was a bit taken aback by it. But I realized that he just absolutely doesn't see. He's of course never had this experience of. If I go back,
he cannot compare it.
Exactly. I mean, when I would first go with even Topalov time, I don't even speak about. But I started working with Anish in 2015, and we would go to a tournament, and he would play against someone the next day. We would open our laptops.
Yeah.
We would work for an hour, 2 hours, and we would have everything covered. He would go to the game. Next day he would have an advantage from the opening, etc. It was a fantastic time, and that is completely. First of all, everyone, no one is predictable anymore. If you see the games of Gukesh, Prague, Abdusator, they play. It's impossible to predict what they do. Yeah. Okay, they have some small preferences for things, but even if you know what they do, it's going to be still very hard to do anything. So it's everything changed, and these kids, like Gukesh, they just don't care. They play their game, and you see also that it doesn't hurt the game of chess in any way. That's also why I'm jumping from one thing to another. You have to stop me if you. But that's why I think freestyle is not really gonna last in a sense that. I think there are about 10 people in the world, my generation type, but then a lot stronger in the top, who feel a little bit, helpless when it comes to openings. Like, it's
frustrated.
That's the word I was looking for. And they see this very interesting game. I like it myself. I play it online sometimes, Fischer Random. I enjoy the game. I just don't think that it solves something for 10 players in the world. And the amateur players, I think they like it when somebody plays King's Indian or Sicilian. They like to see top players play their opening.
They want to have some footholds.
Something, yes. Fischer Random... for me, it has very little. I also find it a bit ugly, to be honest. These starting positions, I like the symmetry that the normal chess gives. I mean, imagine a starting position with a bishop on A1. It is so ugly. A bishop on A1, a pawn on B2. I mean,
it should be forbidden.
In endgame studies, you're not even allowed to compose a study with a bishop on A1 and a pawn on B2 because it's not a valid position. Yeah. I mean, anyway, it's...
But let's say if we're talking about Gukesh, who doesn't see that problem, and probably from his perspective that is correct. But at the same time, after he won the candidates tournament, then Gajewski, his trainer, he explained that what they were specifically looking for were positions where they knew what to do and where it wasn't so easy for their opponent to make a plan. And even if you're minus 0.2, but if you know what it's all about and the other one doesn't, so that it also creates new strategies.
Absolutely, and I think it's that. So it's they don't have that feeling of frustration.
No.
Because they don't know how it used to be. And they are fully adapted to this age, to the current playing conditions, and they perfect their skills in this way, and I think they're doing a great job. I rarely see games of Gukesh, Prague, Abdu. I mean, I see them as leaders of this new generation. I rarely see games of theirs where they don't manage to get the game going. They always do. Always do. It's the older generation that. Sometimes,
because they lack.
And they take risk, of course. They take much more risk than others do in the opening phase of the game.
Well, what you see with what you used to see with all the players that it's, at some point they find it much more difficult to play for a win because they also they have learned to start thinking for their opponent and I mean it's all the youthful optimism vanishes at some point. And of course, these young kids, I mean, they don't have that history, as you say.
Yeah, and I think also some older players, you see the ones who are able to adapt, they also stick around longer.
Yeah.
I always thought Vichy was amazing in that sense.
Yeah.
Because he, also in his approach, at least I've never worked with him, so I haven't seen him up close, but from his games, you could really see that he was playing all the modern stuff, things that were unthinkable maybe 20, 30 years earlier, but he was constantly picking up things from all over the place and without any prejudice, always open-minded to everything. And I thought that was one of his huge strengths, that he would just be open for everything, even at age 50 plus.
Yeah.
I think that's a very rare thing.
Yeah. No, I remember at some point he criticized me for something because I wasn't following something in some rifle publishing house or whatever, and I hadn't seen it, and he chided me for that. He says, you should read that. I mean, don't you know that people at Mercedes, that they also get these Toyotas to see how they were made? And I found that very instructive, because and this is exactly what you're saying. I mean, keep an open mind.
Yes.
If you're making a Mercedes, then you also want
to... In general, I always found him one of the most impressive people in the world of chess.
Mm-hmm.
Just so clear-minded, so very impressive figure, simply. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. If we once, if there will be a film on Fishy, it should be called A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've seen these changes through the time. I mean, if you were to compare, the strongest players that you've worked with were Veselin Topalov and Anish Giri, and there's not a big gap in years between those two. But in fact, in a chess sense, it's several generations.
Oh, it's giants,
I mean, they're both fantastic players.
Yeah.
But at the same time, totally different players.
No, I mean the eras if I think about how we approach things.
Trying to compare them. If you start with
playing wise, also they're of course opposites.
Yeah.
Veselin, he was. Yeah, one of the most aggressive players out there. I mean, at the top, I think, ever.
Yeah.
And at his peak, he was, of course, also... I mean, he was the best. I think in... Basically, when Kasparov retired up until, I would say, 2006, 2007, I would rate him the best player in the world. And still, of course, many years after that, he was also among the very best. Vichy was out there, of course.
And you also think that, let's say, the world championship that he won in St. Louis, that was a justified...
I feel a little bit bad for him in because they FIDE now restructured the titles and they kind of skipped him over, while I just see him as... And okay, people will say I'm not a very objective, but I do see him as a very worthy world champion. I mean, he really was the best player in those. And I think if you would ask... other players in that list of other world champions, they would also rate him there. I understand that in that period it was a little bit messy, but I think he got a bit wronged there.
The best Kasparov years, there was a year that Topalov's results were just astounding.
And 2004, I think, the year before. When he in Libya, he made this enormous score in the World Cup before he lost to I think it was Kasim.
Yeah, but I think even earlier in the late 90s.
He had also he had a bit of a bad stretch like around the millennium, right?
Because I remember at some point Silvio Danilov he called me and of course he was slightly biased as the manager of but. There was a time when we had an awful lot of covers with Kasparov on it, and probably fully justified. And then Silvio he says, "Why is Veselin never on the cover?" And I said, "Yeah, he's been on the cover there." And then I really started looking at it, and I had to admit that he was right. He was right. I mean, Veselin wasn't getting his due then. That he had deserved more covers.
No, I mean, and again, I mean, I think the games he played, it's actually a pity he's not really a writer himself. He never published anything, because his, I mean, if he would write a best book, best games collection,
Yeah,
it would be absolutely. I mean, his best. He played some games in that period. Maybe it's also because I was growing up myself, so I was following everything, obviously, with great enthusiasm. But those were some amazing games that he was sacrificing exchange in every single game at some point.
Yeah.
And the opening ideas that he was throwing in, and well, of course, my work with him. It of course culminated in this match with Vichy, and that's still one of the best chess memories that I have. Today, it was 2010. It's already 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But that was amazing. I mean, I remember thinking various times during that match that I was in my hotel room, and I was thinking, oh, it's amazing that I'm just part of the World Championship match here. Because it became clear to me quite early on that I was not going to play a match myself. So this is I thought it was a great experience.
He had the initiative in the match.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, I still think that he could definitely have won that match. It's again, that's not a very daring thing to say, because it was very close.
Yeah.
But he, like you say, he had the initiative. I think what cost him the match finally, it's actually pretty certain, I think, he just didn't want to play tiebreak.
Mm-hmm.
He felt his chances were very bad there.
Yeah.
And so he went overboard in that last game.
Yeah.
That's he took excessive risks there and got mated. Mm. Essentially, that's how the match ended. But I greatly appreciated that period. So I started working with him. I first worked with Chaparinov.
Mm-hmm.
And then
he worked for him.
Exactly. And so between 27 and 11, let's say, then it's when it stopped. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. DGT introduced digital clocks to the chess world at a time when only analog clocks were used. For over 30 years, DGT has been making the official FIDE chess clock, endorsed by the World Chess Federation. DGT clocks are the world's best-selling chess clocks, the standard in chess timing and used everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
Probably Topalov's legacy has also been damaged because of what happened in the Kramnik match and the rumors that were spread after San Luis, when there were many suspicions, which... Of course, we cannot prove anything, but I remember the match in Sofia where you were a second. And, I mean, all the precautions had been taken there. I think Fischer's team, they had the secret service of Germany with them. I don't know what. Yeah. And then I thought, okay, so how is it possible that he's playing so well here? So I think it definitely damaged his legacy in a broader sense, that some people, they will say, yes, but we never know.
Yeah, you mean San Luis or because
San Luis.
That was a bit before my time, of course. I didn't experience that firsthand.
Hmm.
But I saw him in. I mean, the fact that he was the favorite there. He went in the tournament as a favorite. I spoke with Chaparinov about. I mean, they prepared. I mean, they were they were at both, actually. Chaparinov was young and upcoming. Yeah. Wesley was in his prime, you could say, those years. I think what he did there was. I mean, I have no doubt that everything was you know.
Yeah. No,
I see absolutely. And in the Kramnik Topalov match, I also we spoke about this very very frankly. I started working with him the year after.
Yeah.
And in those days, I also said, you know, I don't see any, you know. But that was okay. He was not. He was very cool about that in general. So we never.
I found it interesting because I was in San Luis and I mean there were several players who had suspicions, but they couldn't prove anything. And what I found interesting was that after the match, I remember Rai Tischbirek of Schach, he said, "Okay, then let's do a test. If he got signals from Silvio, then when did he get them?" So he started to examine those games. And he said, where? I mean, where did he get this sign from? So, and I think that is the sad thing, that particularly certain Russian players were spreading these stories then, and it's impossible to find.
Yeah.
So I've always been very impressed by his career, and also the longevity of that.
Yes.
Because
it
was not 2 or 3 years. So,
if we jump if we make a jump to the current times, where of course we also have some cheating accusations and etc. And I really think that the whole paranoia actually is a bigger issue than the cheating. So I've been saying this is one of my favorite things too. I discussed it with many people.
Yeah.
I really think we should. I mean. Magnus Carlsen, absolutely fantastic ambassador of our game, obviously.
Yeah.
But the way he handled the whole Niemann thing, I remember it was completely shocking. He stepped down from a tournament.
Yeah,
it's obvious what he's hinting at.
Yeah.
I assumed something will come,
and
then some interview comes where he states that Hans was sitting very confidently behind the board. I thought that was. I was shocked by that, in fact.
Yeah.
And it opened the floodgates. I mean, great ambassador of our game, but that it's something you can really blame him for, that he opened the floodgates for what I see now as a sort of a mass paranoia that is ongoing. Hans, by now, it's clear he's a very legit player. He's very strong. He did some things online, probably that are not great.
Even that was so exaggerated.
Yes, it's.
I mean, to at some point to come with this. First it was a couple of games, then suddenly it was 100 games.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, I know a lot of people who play a couple of hundred games a day. So if he played 100 games on a specific day and he was cheating there, 15-year-old, congratulations. You shouldn't do it, but don't turn this mice into an elephant.
I think something was up there. I don't know what happened there with Magnus in St. Louis. I would think that deep inside he probably regrets what happened there. But I don't know. Obviously, I never spoke with him about this.
last year we knew that there were going to be at least two films we made on that, which were
some Netflix thing is
that were going to come out earlier this year. So we're still waiting for that because then everything is going to be proved. So let's not run ahead of things and wait for these movies to. Let's go to Anish. I mean, a totally different player. And a totally different time in way of preparing. I mean, that is, let's say, also technologically at a very high level.
Yeah, though initially, so when I started working with him in 2015, it was still the same approach as we used with Veselin. So a lot of opening work and finding ideas was still relatively easy.
Yeah.
So his preparation was at the very highest level. He could show that in all his games. And so with Anish, it was interesting because it changed over time. You constantly have to adapt your he's also one of those guys that is constantly thinking about how the chess world is evolving.
Yeah.
I think he does that very well. He's very much in tune with where things are headed.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Well, before we do this, I just met him actually here in The Hague where we are now.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, we spoke, of course, about he just qualified for the candidates. Like, how do things stand? And actually, the next steps, etc. It's always very interesting to share with him to hear his thoughts on things because he has. It's clearly something he spends a lot of time on thinking, of course, and.
Sure.
It became harder. For him, of course, especially because he is from that different generation. So his approach will have to change as well. He's also forced out of his usual routine, and that's maybe also good. Shake things up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it also spices things up, yes, if it's different.
And well, in terms of course, characters and the way they, I mean, Topalov and Anish, they, of course, couldn't be further apart. Anish is a very solid player, though. I mean, he has his moment, for example, Night of, it's one of his main openings, which, of course, forces you sometimes to really go all out. But, of course, he's a very solid guy. And
yeah, but then he comes, he's well prepared.
And, yes, and exactly.
I think the great thing about the Nidorf is that it's a very sharp opening. But in fact, if you know that opening well, then it's not a very risky opening.
Yeah, and I think it was Kramnik who once said that the Nidorf is a positional opening.
Yeah,
and there is some truth to that as well. Of course, there are many sharp lines, but there are many. You can play the opening. Just based on the ideas and the knowledge that you've acquired. Well, obviously not at the top level, but I think it's a playable opening as well. It has healthy foundations, and there is some truth to that. I think that it's positional.
Well, let's say in a way, what I remember from years back when the Dragon was popular. I mean, some people were playing the Dragon who were not the biggest adventurers in town. It was just a very good weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, there was also a psychological side to it, and so it is interesting to look at openings from various perspectives.
Yeah, and I think that for Anish specifically, he is now in a very interesting phase of his career. He's 31. I think mentally he is probably in his best state ever in his career. He's a bit more mature. He's been there. He's seen things. He's won Baikonur. He's won the Grand Swiss now. He's been around. He's not easily faced anymore, I think. So, I think him qualifying for the Kinderrates, I'm very interested in the next cycle, in the next.
It's interesting that you say that, because when I saw him walking around during the Grand Swiss, I mean, in fact, the first thing that struck me every time was how much at ease he was.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
and that is amazing at that level when there's so much at stake.
I think that's one of his advantages right now, that he's really, cool. I mean, I've often heard Nakamura say he doesn't care about things, but with Naka, I always have the lingering feeling that he actually cares a lot about things.
He's a great actor.
Yeah, great actor, yeah. With Anish, I know Anish much better as well. It's clear that he is in a very good state of mind right now, and I think that should be very helpful. Also, you saw it in the last few rounds in the Grand Swiss. He was just the coolest of all. The moment he got chances, he grabbed them. He was just on it. In a very good way, I think.
Very impressive and very deserved, I think.
Absolutely.
You love chess? Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way. On-the-spot reports of the biggest events. Top-notch instruction. Independent journalism. Chess history that comes to life. And great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition or the digital edition for phone, tablet or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website newinchess.com/magazine for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
So, yeah, finally, we got to talk about the Grand Swiss.
Yes, I made a nice bridge there. Yeah.
Thank you for getting there. Well, of course, we've already spoke about a couple of the young talents that did well there as well. Well, who do you hope will be in the candidates besides the people that? So at the moment we have Anish, Matthias. Well, How well do you know Matthias Bluebaum? I mean, you're playing in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I played him quite well. Quite a lot. Sorry.
What kind of player? How would you describe him?
He is a fighter first and foremost. I think excellent fighter, solid repertoire, knows his things inside out. So you cannot really out-prepare him easily. Tactically, very sharp. Mm-hmm. For instance, I thought his wins against Prague and Irigaray in the Grand Prix, they were exemplary for his style. Mm-hmm. So he's not really outplaying them, which is not me speaking badly about him. But for instance, his game against Prague, he got slightly worse from the opening with White, but he's hanging in there. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, Prague, while pushing, while trying to make something of his position, actually goes wrong. Yeah. And at that point, Matthias is on it. Yeah. And he just wins. Yeah. He takes some opportunity.
Yeah. The game turned around immediately.
And he didn't give it away anymore. Prague got no chance to get back in the game. So he was very sharp. Yeah. With Irigaray, Irigaray takes enormous risks. We know that. Mm. And he was just there to collect. Mm-hmm. I don't expect miracles from him in the candidates. Nobody does. Mm. But he's definitely going to fight the way he did in Grand Swiss. And
nothing to lose.
Exactly. And, he will... he's going to do better than let's say... he's less of an underdog than Abbasov was, for example, in the previous candidates. So, and, okay, he deserved his spot. He did played an amazing tournament. Yeah.
Yeah, well, what I found impressive was in his last round when there was so much at stake for him. Probably a draw is enough, but you're facing Firuja, and he's trying things.
Yes,
He didn't sit back passively. No, he just steered for the position that he wanted to have.
Yeah, and I think another good thing with Bluebaum is. He has won tournament. He's a two-time European champion, I believe. Winning though, I mean, it shows certain character, of course. Winning such events, it requires certain mental strength as well. So he's just not a pushover. I think he's just really just a tough fighter.
Yeah.
So I don't expect him to roll over in the candidates just like that.
No.
Of course, he's going to have a tough time and. Mm. But he's going to be fighting him.
So then we have Anish Bluebaum, then Fabiano Caruana. He already qualified, and Pragnananda seems to be qualifying from the FIDE circuit this year. Then we have the rating spot, which
probably Hikaru. Yeah,
which
probably
seems
Hikaru.
To be going to Hikaru.
I would feel I would feel quite bad if my highest rating ever would be achieved, you know, through this route.
You know
what I mean? Because he had an amazing career. He has an amazing career. His peak rating, I think, was 2816, 10 years ago. Mm. But he's going to now play 11 more games. I think he will win all of those. Yeah. And he'll be somewhere along the 28, 20 something. So that will be his peak rating. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. To me, it would feel like a bit of a blemish. Maybe I'm too idealistic.
That's too puritanical. It's
I don't know. Having said that, he is fully in his rights, and I'm not gonna say that it's a disgrace or something. I would feel slightly awkward that this would be my peak rating, having played 21 games against basically amateur players and like absolute amateur.
No, 11. I mean, 10 of them were Norway chess, right?
No, he played 10 and he'll play 11 more now, right?
Oh, 11 more. Yeah. Sure.
So he's going to play 21, I think.
I see what you mean. At the same time, I think Hikaru can do nothing to damage his career anymore. I mean, it's been it's been a wild ride and a great ride. And
I have nothing against what I mean. He has a great career, and yeah, his peak rating is going to be achieved in this way. That feels a little bit.
Yeah, it's more philosophical almost.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So now we're going to have the World Cup for the final three spots. You got any favorites or?
Well, I heard Firouzja is not playing.
Mm-hmm.
He's been canceling events more often. He's hard to predict, but yeah. I don't really understand it. I mean, I would think that going for the candidates is a big deal for him. But maybe it's not. I don't know. He's hard to. I do think it's a pity.
Yeah.
Because he is, of course, still one of the special talents out there. So yeah. So it's a pity if he's not even gonna try. Let's say. To be honest, I just hope for the strongest guys to get in. I don't have real favorites, but let's say
at least five.
The Abdou Satoros. Let's see, who do we have?
Well, Erigaise.
Oh, obviously, Erigaise, yeah, needs to be in. Yeah, that is. That would be great, of course.
Yeah.
Keimer. Yes. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think
yeah.
he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, of course, very close in the Grand Swiss now.
Yeah, yeah. I was.
And
very,
he said
very
an amazing year.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing year. Yeah. Obviously, it's the year of Prague in a way. Yeah. He's been winning everything. But it's also in his shadow, it's been the year of Vincent, obviously.
Yeah, you can see that he's done so much to make this next step.
Yes. Yeah, he is really now one of the guys, the top 10 guys. And he's going to remain there also, that's very clear. He has the level, he has everything basically, it was, I think, Peter Lakoff's prediction back in the day.
Mm.
I think... it was after he won. Well, after he won this Open in Genk, he said, "Like, this is going to be a top 10 player for sure."
Yeah, well, but of course that's not fair because later he started to help him.
So. No, but it is interesting in a way that I think Peter is very careful generally with his and he sounded very sure of this. He was really sure of this, and to be honest, also it is extremely hard to predict these things because I don't know how good Oro will become or Mishra or Woodward or etc. All the new. It's very hard. Some they jump. Sometimes you think, oh, this talent, it sparks. It will go straight to top 10, and sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, and it is a beautiful combination, Keimer with Peter Leko. That's a very strong team.
Yes,
on many levels.
Yes.
So, okay, let's see who we will get, Erwin. And I think this. This was more or less the prologue of our podcast. I think we will have to do six more, but we'll find time.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for accepting the invitation. It was a true
great pleasure.
And as far as I'm concerned, we will soon talk again.
I'm ready. Yes.
Very good.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. To leave a comment, go to our socials or email us directly at podcast@newinchess.com. If we've gotten you in the mood to buy a great chess book, please go to the webshop on our website, newinchess.com. There you'll find a wide selection of fine books and all the details how to easily order them. And this is also the place to subscribe to New in Chess, the magazine that has readers in 116 countries around the world. We thank our sponsors at DGT for their support and hope to have you back for the next episode of the New in Chess podcast.